from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, the National Park Service's plan for the future of Yosemite could mean no more bike or horse rentals, rafting, swimming, or ice skating at the park. According to Park Service officials, reducing the human footprint is critical to preserving Yosemite for future generations. But some park regulars are opposing the plan, saying that the recreational facilities are historic and central to the park's mission. Meanwhile, some environmentalists are saying the restoration plan does not go far enough. We'll dig into the debate and discuss what the future holds for this California treasure after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of our Forum program. The National Park Service is considering a plan aimed at protecting and restoring Yosemite Valley, but it could result in the removal of some popular facilities, such as bike rental and swimming pools. The Merced River Plan, a 2,500-page document, comes after years of contentious litigation over what should be allowed in Yosemite Valley and the Merced River running through it. The plan also recommends rebuilding nearly half of over 400 campsites lost in a flood back in 1997 and restoring 203 acres of meadows, as well as improving parking. But much of the ongoing battle seems to be centered on the question of nature protection and sustainability versus recreational activities and how or to what extent such activities harm the river. We've got a whole panel of people on both sides of this issue that will be talking with us in the course of this hour. And one person who's going to spend the hour with us, I want to go to right away, is Paul Rogers, who is well-known to Forum listeners, environmental reporter for the San Jose Mercury News and managing editor of KQED Science and Environment Unit. And Paul, glad to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. This does seem to be pretty polarized. And let's go back to, where a lot of this contentiousness began. It goes back to blocking dams in the 1999 lawsuit after the flood, doesn't it, for the most part?
Yeah, this is one of the most heated political battles over Yosemite that I've seen in quite some time. And it's such a political firestorm right now that it's very difficult to even get officials from the National Park Service to speak publicly about it, because they're getting pilloried from all sides in Congress and in the public. And
you've given me an opportunity, Paul, excuse me, to mention that National Park Service had agreed to provide a representative to join us in this program, but canceled. Yosemite spokesperson Scott Gettiman told us that they were, and I'm quoting him now, uncomfortable with appearing on the program with critics of the plan.
Yeah, they've really taken a lot of heat for this. Basically, this is a classic example of America's struggle with how to protect national parks and how to also provide recreation for the public. You know, when the National Park Service was created in 1916, it was given a dual mission by Congress, which was to conserve the scenery and the wildlife and the natural heritage of the United States, but to also provide for the recreation of the people. And the question is, in this conflict, and also in many others, like helicopters over the Grand Canyon and snowmobiles at Yellowstone, where do you draw the line? And this one here in Yosemite, this dates back to 1987, where there was a developer who was proposing to build a dam just outside the park along Highway 140 near Mariposa on the Merced River. And at the time, Republicans and Democrats in California didn't want the dam. So there was a bipartisan coalition that had the Democrat Congressman Tony Coelho and Democratic Senator Alan Cranston and the Republican Pete Wilson. They all got together. They wrote a bill that named the Merced River a National Wild and Scenic River. And the National Wild and Scenic River System is a system that has been around for about 40 years in America. Any river that's placed on that by Congress, you can't build a dam on it. So the idea at the time was to stop this dam, and the bill was successful. President Reagan signed it, and no dam was built. But the Congress also included not only the parts of the river outside the park, but the 81 miles of the Merced River that flowed through the park. And even though the environmentalists who supported that bill at the time now say that they did not intend in any way to limit or stop recreation in Yosemite, the result is, after a whole bunch of different lawsuits over over this plan and the river designation. The Park Service came up with this plan that, as you mentioned, would not only restore the river through the park and add some new campgrounds, but it would also ban bicycle and horse rentals. It would remove the ice rink at Curry Village. It would tear out the swimming pools at the Yosemite Lodge and the Ahwahnee Hotel. It would even tear out the longest historic stone bridge in the Merced River in Yosemite Valley. And remove facilities like the Yosemite Arts Center, where families have gone for generations. And, you know, a lot of folks are saying the plan goes too far and that it would penalize the kind of recreation that families have enjoyed for a really long time.
Well, there are people on the environmental side of things who we'll hear from who say the plan doesn't go far enough, but I guess a lot of this boils down to whether or not recreational activities actually harm the river, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And what's really interesting about this is, you know, the average person on the street says, how in the world does renting a bicycle harm the river that flows through Yosemite Valley? And the park planners admit that it doesn't. And they say you could still bring your own bicycle or you could still bring your own horse, to which critics say, well, how in the world does your own bicycle not harm the river, but a rental bicycle does? And what the Park Service says is that it's the amenities that go with these rentals, the housing for the people who rent the bikes and the buildings where you store the bikes and the rafts and things like that. And as they try to reduce the development footprint in the valley to comply with some of these court orders, because they've been losing these lawsuits about what's allowed in the valley and not, you know, they cite a judge's decision that came a few years ago in the Ninth Circuit, where the judge basically said, under this 1987 Wild and Scenic Rivers Law, the Park Service has to draw up a plan that shows how it protects and enhances the river. And all of these commercial activities, like bike rentals and the ice rink, the park did not demonstrate to the court how those activities would, quote, protect and enhance the river. So the Park Service's lawyers are terrified of being sued again and losing again. And so the lawyers are basically telling the Park Service planners, you know, err on the side of conservatism here and just remove all this stuff. But that ignores the politics that families and the local communities and the local congressmen, most of them, don't want to remove all this stuff. So that's why the Park Service is now ducking and covering.
There was a comment period, and about 30,000 comments came forward. Two-thirds of them, I believe, were in support of the plan. What has been the public response in general to this plan?
They had more than 40 public meetings, including one in San Francisco, where they took public testimony. The public likes a lot of it in general. You know, as I said, it's adding back some campsites, although not all the ones that were lost in the big flood in the late 90s. But, you know, there are things like restoring 203 acres along the river and doing a lot of things that aren't really that controversial. But it's these recreation things that have really created a flashpoint. And, you know, the Park Service was supposed to come out with the final plan after the comment period yesterday at the end of July, but they announced a few weeks ago they were delaying it 5 months until the end of the year. And the reason they're delaying it is because of all the controversy and because of people like Congressman McClintock, whose district the park is in, saying that he will try to hold up the entire Park Service budget over this issue.
And we'll be speaking in this program with Congressman McClintock. Paul Rogers, again, is environment reporter, for the San Jose Mercury News, a managing editor of KQED Science and Environment Unit. I want to go to Ron Sundergill, who is senior director of the Pacific Region with the National Park Conservation Association. They support the Merced River Plan for Yosemite. And Ron Sundergill, good to have you with us on Forum. Good morning to you. Do we have Ron Sundergill? We did.
Hello.
Oh, yeah, you are there. Okay.
Okay.
saying hello to the ether for a moment there. We just got a good rundown from Paul Rogers about this plan, and you know it's caused a great deal of polarization, to put it mildly. I mean, those who say, why are you taking away all of these recreational things that have long been associated with Yosemite, and others whom we'll hear from who say the plan doesn't go far enough environmentally in terms of environmental protection. Why is this a good plan?
Well, here at the National Parks Conservation Association, we have been working very closely with the park for a number of years on this plan, you know, helping them to work on it and supporting their effort. And we think that what they've come up with is a good plan and one that threads the needle. There's going to be people on both sides that are going to be upset with the plan, that some, like was said, are going to think that it doesn't go far enough in protecting the river, and some that think that it goes too far with some of the recreational facilities that are being taken out. But 99% of the recreational facilities during the summer will be retained, and 92% of the recreational facilities, recreational opportunities during the winter will be retained. I think that the plan is a good one. I think that the questions about the recreational opportunities being removed is being dealt with in the planning process. At this point, the park is doing a really good job of listening to the people. They have come up with an alternative for a permanent ice rink that would be a temporary ice rink during the winter that would use an existing parking lot, probably. So I think that the Park Service is really listening and doing a good job of listening to the public, and I think in the end we'll have a plan that hopefully 90 some percent of the public will support. And like you did say, a large majority of the comments that came in on this plan from the public supported it. So we want to see the process move forward, and we think the park is doing an excellent job. Basically,
has the park come up with figures vis-a-vis user capacity? Do they really know where that's headed?
Well, they're not proposing a reduction in the visitation to the park. There'll still be the same level of visitation. No restriction, at least right now, that's being proposed. If there are major congestion problems over a period of time, then a system would kick in that would require a reservation system. But that, we're hoping that would not happen. You know, we want to try and make the, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world, and we want to be able to, people should be able to go there, and we want to keep access open. And I think that's the goal of the National Park Service as well, to keep visitors coming to that park and enjoying it and enjoying all the recreational facilities that are there.
And you think that the plan really creates this balance, this delicate balance between recreation on the one hand, which the park has often afforded people who go to Yosemite, and sustaining the natural beauty and doing what people want vis-a-vis, again, nature and what nature has to offer?
Yeah, we think it's a good balance. People will still be able to go and ride their bikes, which we totally support. They'll be able to, the park is coming up with an alternative for rental bike, or modern bike rental system, rather than the system that they have there now, that it'll be less of a footprint in terms of facilities. We think that there will still be an incredible opportunity for recreational experiences in the valley. Keep in mind that this is a very narrow valley, and the reason that these facilities are being changed is that the park is creating new spaces for restoration. It's restoring meadows, and in order to restore existing meadows in that narrow space, it has to get rid of developed areas. So that means providing parking, but also restoring the beautiful meadows there.
But help us understand how we're talking, by the way, with Ron Sundergill, Senior Director of the Pacific Region National Parks Conservation Association, which supports the Merced River Plan. How do rental facilities hurt the Merced River?
Well, Paul Rogers said, what happens is that when you have a facility, you then have all the amenities that go with it, all the housing that's required. It's not just a facility. There's people that have to staff it and so forth. So part of the equation is it's basically you want to try to limit the footprint in the valley, and if you have facilities that then have to be staffed by people that live there, it increases the human footprint. So the idea is to create recreational programs that do not create as much of a human footprint. So for instance, in a bike rental situation, you would have modern bike rental stalls instead of having a storefront where there would be heavy staffing of a bike rental facility.
Well, Tom McClintock is with us as well this morning, Republican Representative U.S. Congress, 4th District, and his district includes Yosemite. Congressman McClintock, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
I'd have mentioned, by the way, that Paul Rogers described you as spitting mad about this, and I know you've gone back to 1864 and the authorization report that said recreation is inalienable for all time and therefore ought to be. You see this as essentially anti-tourist, I guess, don't you?
Well, the 1864 Act that established Yosemite Valley was for the express purpose of, quote, public use, resort, and recreation for all time. This plan fundamentally changes that mission and breaks the compact that the public was promised and has enjoyed for nearly 150 years. And I'm mad because my constituents are mad. I represent the gateway communities. My district includes Yosemite National Park. As you point out, they depend on park tourism to support their economies. The affected counties and communities are unanimous in their vigorous opposition to this plan.
We've been reading about comment in favor of this plan. In fact, 30,000 comments, two-thirds in support.
Well, that's what the Park Service is reporting. They have not released them yet. But I can tell you that a phone survey of the people in the gateway communities that I conducted last month, and these are jealous guardians of Yosemite, expressed opposition to it in numbers well exceeding 80%. In fact, the Democratic congressman, Tony Coelho, who authored the act that designated the Merced River as wild and scenic, has written a very strong letter of opposition in which he says that act was never intended to remove longstanding amenities in the park.
So you're going to introduce an amendment to the budget to keep these recreational activities intact?
Well, there are several options, none of them particularly good. The appropriations process, unfortunately, is badly gridlocked back here. It's not entirely clear there will even be an appropriations vehicle to attach a rider to. We can always proceed with freestanding legislation, but that will take a lot longer than this decision is going to be pending. Ultimately, all we can do is beat the drums and hope that the Park Service comes to its senses.
The New York Times quoted you, Congressman McClintock, as saying that this is really the work of the most radical and nihilistic fringe of the environmental left. Can you clarify?
Well, there was a group of very left-leaning environmental organizations that brought suit. The Park Service entered into a settlement with them in which they were paid over $1 million of public funds. The terms of the settlement, which the Park Service says binds them, does not in any way require them to remove these longstanding amenities.
Well, I've got Greg Adair on the line here, too, who directs the Friends of Yosemite Valley. They think the plan doesn't go far enough, and they're concerned about the sustaining of the environment here. Greg, welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you for inviting us, Michael.
And all this contentiousness and litigation notwithstanding, you look at this plan as simply inadequate. Why?
Well, the Park Service itself says prominently in the document, and I'll just quote them briefly, Alternative 5 would generally continue the kinds and amounts of use in Yosemite Valley that exists today with improvements in the type and ease of access provided by visitors. That's the fact. There's been all this firestorm over removing a few facilities, and somehow the debate or the discussion has been about overreach by removing, at my count, three or four things, whereas the Ninth Circuit penned almost a half a page of a footnote to describe dozens of things in Yosemite Valley that essentially are ongoing impacts to the river, none of which have been dealt with. So really what we would say is that this is a plan about the status quo.
But again, the rental facilities really hurt the Merced River?
No. Actually, I'd like to respond to that. The bicycle rental seems particularly off-topic. I mean, it just doesn't seem relevant. The swimming pool is, ecologically and environmentally a very limited relevance. The raft rental, the park has known for years that when individual autonomous rafting was commercialized by the business concessionaire, that it did become a problem. In fact, you can't have a quiet picnic now at the pullout over at Sentinel Beach. So that has become a problem, and we've been asking for some kind of limitation or change in that. Another one which didn't come up was the horse rides. I mean, that's an actual environmental effect. You have something called brood site parasitism, which is means that songbirds are affected by an overpopulation of brown-headed cowbirds. That's been studied and known. So we have a very severe effect on songbirds in the valley because of the stables, the two stables that are there.
Well, your big opposition, I know, is that you feel this is out of step with the Wilderness Act.
Not the Wilderness Act, the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ron Sundergan, let me go back to get your reactions to what you heard from Congressman Klinik and from Greg Adair.
Well, as I said, this is a plan that I think does a good job of threading the needle. And I think you have a good indication here, where you've got environmental groups that are on one side and some segment of the public that is not pleased with the limitation on recreational uses. But, I think that the park is doing a good job in responding to the concerns that the public has expressed, that some of the members of the public have expressed. And, it's time to move on, and it's time for us to approve, I think, this plan after a 13-year process. I think Yosemite will be well-served, and I think the public will be well-served.
Well, the public, from the environmental standpoint, again, Tom Klinik, is not well-served. Greg Adair kind of outlined some of that, and it would also probably take the position that the parks are missing an opportunity to go deeper into land use changes, for example, or that these changes are largely token, that the human footprint is too great.
Going raft rentals, horseback riding rentals, gift shops, snack facilities, swimming pools, iconic facilities, including the ice skating rink at Curry Village, the art center, the historic stone bridges that date back to the 1920s. And we have to remember something. In 1997, a flooding wiped out almost half the campsites at Yosemite Valley. Congress appropriated $17 million to replace those campsites. The money was spent. The campsites were never replaced, and that's what's causing overcrowding. You've got half the campsites for the same number of visitors. This plan slightly increases the campsites, but locks them in at a 30% reduction and a 50% reduction in lodging compared to the pre-flood era. You know, you look at the swimming pools, three swimming pools in the valley that give visitors a safe place to take their kids to go swimming. They've got lifeguards there. The Park Service wants to close two of them. That means packed overcrowding at the remaining pool, which is going to push families seeking water recreation into the Merced River. They talk about, well, we're not eliminating all the shops at Yosemite, we're just reducing the number of them. Well, understand the practical impact to tourists. It means that they're going to have to walk much greater distances to access these services, and then they're going to need to endure long lines when they get there. And one of the biggest misrepresentations that I've heard is that we don't really ban these services like bike rentals, we just move them to better locations. Well, the government's own report is very specific. They use the term eliminating and removing these services. And they go on to specifically state, and this is a direct quote from their report, over time visitors would become accustomed to the absence of these facilities and would no longer expect them as a part of their experience in Yosemite. Their intent could not possibly be clearer.
Tom Klinik, thank you for joining us. Tom Klinik, Congressman, 4th District Republican, which includes Yosemite in his district. And you can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about a proposed plan that would limit activities in Yosemite. The National Park Service's plan for the future of Yosemite actually could mean no more bike or horse rentals, rafting, swimming, or ice skating at the park. And according to Park Service officials, reducing the human footprint is critical to preserving Yosemite for future generations. But a number of park regulars are opposing the plan, saying the recreational facilities are historic and central to the park's mission. And meanwhile, some environmentalists are saying the restoration plan simply doesn't go far enough. We're digging into that debate this hour, discussing what the future holds for this California treasure. We certainly welcome your involvement in the program, and we'd like to hear from you on the subject. You can call us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. And also join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or to our Facebook page, or email us, forum@kqed.org. In fact, looking at some emails coming in now, Brian writes there, this is a sacred place. No one will say this is not a special place. Ice skating rinks, swimming pools, oyster farms, get out. This is a sacred place. Chris writes on our website, I've never been there, but I hike the outskirts. I stay away partly because of the stories of congestion and traffic and pollution on the main drag. May not be totally true, but that is the image, and that is the last thing I could tolerate if I were to go to the wilderness. And Roy says, this would be a bad precedent for all the other national parks and monuments. Certainly, we do not want to love Yosemite to death. In turn, we should not be like overprotective parents either. No doubt, managing motor traffic is essential, yet all the activities in question attract people to the park. If we reduce the human footprint far enough, we reduce human visitation, which in turn will lead to a further disconnect from the land. And John writes, having lived and worked in the valley, I believe everything works just fine there. Most families with RVs and kids camp there. Most tourists end up there. It's the epicenter of the park. Yes, there's too many cars, people, trash, etc. However, a short walk or hike away and you find the true Yosemite experience, pristine wilderness in all its glory. Don't tell anyone. Paul Rogers with us, environment reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, a managing editor of KQED Science and Environment Unit. Ron Sundergill, who is senior director of the Pacific Region National Parks Conservation Association, which supports the Merced River Plan for Yosemite. We spoke earlier with Tom McClintock, representative from the 4th District, a Republican congressional representative. Greg Adair is with us, who is director of the Friends of Yosemite Valley. They believe that this plan simply does not go far enough. And I had mentioned earlier that we actually had the National Park Service agreed to provide a representative to join us on this program. They later canceled, and their spokesman, Scott Gettiman, told us they were, I'm using his word now, uncomfortable with appearing on the program with critics of the plan. And one of those critics is Wendy Brown Berry, who is a founder and chair of Yosemite for Everyone. They oppose the plan to remove commercial facilities from Yosemite. Welcome, Wendy Berry Brown. Brown Berry, excuse me. Good to have you.
Thank you, Michael.
Sorry, didn't mean to invert your names there.
That's okay.
You're pretty much on board here with Congressman McClintock, I know, but I was puzzled by something you said about this being discrimination to the elderly and the young and minorities. How is that is the Merced plan? How is it discriminatory toward the elderly, the young, and the minorities?
The elderly people are concerned about their safety, and many visitors are unwilling to venture out on their own. They lack outdoor experience. They need some guidance, and the rafts and the bicycles, they provide a safe way. If they're turned loose with their own raft, they don't know about the river. They don't know about the dangers of the river. These concessionaires provide, they keep the bikes in good shape. If they go and get one out of a kiosk, who's going to make sure that they're adjusted properly, that there's handicap for their, for the handicapped or for their children? These people need this kind of supervision to keep them safe in the park.
And let's get your position. Let's get your position as clear as we can here. None of what is being essentially put forward here as being taken away from the park, in your judgment, does any real damage at all? And you feel maybe what they're doing is trying to avoid getting sued again?
Yeah, I believe that that's the case. Unfortunately, it appears that the executive branch is taking laws with specific directions by the legislative branch, and they're using them to go beyond the intent of Congress. We like to see the lawmaking power return to the legislature where it belongs without the executive branch interfering or changing them to suit their needs.
And when you hear, for example, these are just token changes, there's too much of a human footprint there, we've got to sustain the valley, what do you say?
Mr. Adair says just a few. In my research into the environmental impact statement, it's more than just a few. the Curry Village pizza deck and the bar, the retail stores, the garage facility. If someone breaks down in their car up there, they have to have it towed out of the valley to get it repaired. The garage facility goes away. The historic apple orchard, the housekeeping camp grocery store, the Yosemite Village sports shop, the activity center, nature bridge is threatened. John Muir's intention was to welcome the visitor to Yosemite to be educated and inspired. And these educational opportunities in Yosemite are very important as they will encourage visitors to take care of their park.
And Wendy Brownberry, again, is founder and chair of Yosemite for Everyone. Quick response from you, Greg Adair.
Sure. I think it would be instructive to look back at what the Ninth Circuit set out as a standard. They basically came after the Park Service for something that was quite obvious. There's ongoing impacts. We have a sports shop, restaurants, cafeterias, bars, snack stands. They go on talking about hotels and housing. And, you know, there's dozens of examples. And as I said, what's happened here, rather than the Park Service looking carefully at what constitutes outstandingly remarkable values for recreation, and that would include hiking, walking, camping, nature observing, and things like that, they've instead said, well, we'll kind of pick a few things that are symbolic, take those out. But really, the major profit-gaining centers, if anything, gain. There's an increase in the hotel infrastructure. Now, granted, they did lose some hotel rooms with the Curry Rockfall, but they want to replace them with more upscale and more exclusive-style accommodation. We've always opposed that. Simultaneously, they're increasing camping. We favored that, of course, because it comports with the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, and it's fair to people. But the trouble really is that they haven't got the underlying environmental framework to know where to do that and how to do that.
I think you could maybe put some of your position, and I don't mean this in any derogatory way, but into kind of a bumper sticker. We need camps, not hotels.
In fact, we wrote our first pamphlet back in 1997, and it was entitled Campsites, Not Hotels.
Well.
So you're very prescient there. In sum, I would say that the circuit did give them a standard to look towards. The courts have been active in setting forth some language that they should use as a benchmark. And as I said, I think they just walked around it. And it's sad that at this point we're having a big public debate over, an ice cream shop or something like that. The plan does another thing, which should be noted before we get too far in the belief that it is a plan that improves the park. It increased the capacity number, and, you know, that was a central tenet of what the Ninth Circuit said the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act does require. And they failed to explain how increasing the capacity will reduce crowding and congestion, but they purport that it does. Now, it's not that we have a silver bullet answer to that question, but we do think that in a good public process, they must do the exercise. They must have a good and transparent public dialogue about those values that the park set aside for, what this modern statute, the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, could bring us as a sort of baseline and standard for protecting nature and the visitor experience in the park.
But you heard Congressman McClintock say recreation is part of that original vision. It goes all the way back to John Muir, and it's part of the charter that was written back in 1864. I'm just actually prompted to go back, Wendy Brownberry, to you, because contrary to what we just heard from Greg Adair, isn't it your position that this Park Service plan is not helping with congested parking? It's making it worse?
I believe so. I really believe that the parking and congestion does need to be addressed. However, they are using an arbitrary baseline. They need to go back, and the money that they were given to them, the $17 million after the 1997 flood, they were given that to repair the damage and to replace the campsites, and they did not do that. They should go back to use the 97 flood as a baseline for their numbers.
And I need to go to our callers, so let me do that without further delay. Sarah, you're first up. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hi. Sarah, go ahead.
Hi, I'm an avid Yosemite user, and I frankly stay out of the valley in the summer because of the overuse and congestion. And my concern is that people go there for swimming pools and shopping are missing the values that we're talking about, that is Yosemite, which is hiking, looking at nature, and being out there.
Okay, not a great connection, but we get the thought, and we appreciate the call. I want to get some more calls here, and we go to Bill next. Bill, you're on.
Yes, this is interesting. Never in my life, and in fact, I'm somewhat terrified by the thought of it, I would ever support the statements and arguments of a Republican representative to Congress. Congressman McClintock provides a level of, cogent thought and desire for preservation of Yosemite as it is now and as it has been throughout my experience. I've been a user of both the valley and the backcountry, and I can honestly say every time I've come out of the backcountry, I have got down on my knees and thank God that the Park Service has not gotten rid of all the concessions that are there, because they saved me on a number of situations. It's very, very, very disappointing that every time the environmental activists go after things, their biggest concern is a songbird and not the people and other participants in the valley. There's a very strong effort by the Park Service most of the time to maintain a natural balance. They are constantly pushed by nitpickers to try and eliminate the concessions and other experiences that various people who are not capable of walking into the wilderness, who are not capable of taking a week and getting back into the backcountry, to experience and at least get a taste of, and maybe provide some degree of education and experience for their children as well. I am very much opposed to anything the Park Service does in response to the activities of the environmental efforts that are basically to eliminate concessions and facilities in the park, the Central Park area.
All right. I thank you for the call. Ron Sundergo, what would you say to a caller like the last one? He's been saved, he said, by essentially concessions and so like.
Sure, yeah. I have that same feeling. I've done lots of backpacking in the area and trails, and when I come back into the valley, it is nice to have those concessions, and those concessions will still be there. You'll still be able to go to a store and get food or drink or ice cream cones or, you know, whatever it is you want. This is not some draconian cutback in facilities as far as we're concerned, and we think the park, as I said, you know, has done a good job of threading the needle. There will be some concessions that will be eliminated, but we think it's going to be enough to accommodate the visitors at the level that is currently projected.
Let me bring Paul Rogers back in this. Paul, how do you see this threading of the needle? I mean, we're hearing two very different narratives here.
Well, there are a couple of really important points that have come up. The first one, people talk a lot about the park being too crowded. And, you know, I think that's an unfortunate sort of stereotype that we think of these images of the park with traffic jams and you can't even get in. Yosemite National Park is 750,000 acres. That's 25 times the size of the city of San Francisco. And 95% of the park, and actually I think it's a little more, like 97%, is congressionally designated federal wilderness. You cannot build a road on it. You can't build a new building. You can't build anything. It is primeval backcountry. So what we're fighting over is less than 5% of the park. And anybody who goes to the park on virtually any day except for Memorial Day weekend or, you know, Labor Day weekend, if they walk for a few hundred yards, they'll very quickly be away from the cacophony that people are talking about in the valley. Also, there are other entrances to the park. You don't have to go right to the valley. Second, a lot of times people group together environmentalists in this debate, and they say environmentalists want to take everything out of the valley. In fact, the environmentalists have been split on this issue over the last 14 years. It's the two groups, Mr. Adair's group, Friends of Yosemite Valley, and another group, Mariposans for the Environment and Responsible Government, that filed the original lawsuit in 1999. Over the years, the larger environmental groups, including Ron Sundergill's group and NRDC and the Wilderness Society and the Yosemite Fund, have filed court briefs actually disagreeing with the two smaller groups, saying, we don't want to tear the hotels out of the valley. We don't want to tear the campsites out of the valley. So a lot of times you hear people sort of disparagingly say, well, all environmentalists want to rip everything out of the valley. In fact, the environmental community disagrees on that. And finally, there was this issue about camping. And I think this is one of the central issues to the debate, which is, in 1997, when the giant flood came through the valley around New Year's Day, there were 872 campsites in Yosemite Valley. Today, there are 466 campsites. So the number was cut almost in half by that flood. The Park Service never rebuilt the campsites that were lost in that flood 16 years ago. So what that has meant is that when working-class families, you know, think of the guy who sells tires at Sears for a living and his family go on vacation 1 or 2 weeks a year, they can call to book a campsite, and you do it 5 months ahead of time, or you can try to do it on the Internet. Within a few minutes after 8 a.m. on the one day, 5 months ahead, all the campsites in the valley are booked up. So the only place that people like that can go and have a vacation in the valley is to spend $500 a night at the Awani, which they can't afford, or $200 at other hotels.
And it's so, not easy to get into the Awani either. I mean, you have to book a long time in advance.
And so this plan, you know, says it's rebuilding campsites, but it's only going from the 466 that are there now up to 640, which is still far fewer than the 872 that were there before. Now, the Park Service says we don't want to build the campsites right back on the riverbanks where it flooded out, and that makes sense. But they haven't suggested anywhere over the years that the lost campsite should be replaced. So we're really forcing regular middle-class people out of the park. And I guess I'm curious from Greg Adair's standpoint, what is the right number of campsites? Should we go back to 872? And what should we do about the hotels? Should we tear some down?
It's right to you, Greg.
Yeah, we've said as of 15 years ago that there's an incredibly inequitable balance of services provided in Yosemite, completely separate from the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act and the way we think that will cure many things. There's a separate and underlying equity question, and you've nailed it, Paul. In order to address that, one thing we said that could be done is the removal. This, I would say, we are radical. We said they should remove an entire hotel and everything with it and replace it with camping, period, full stop. And ironically, it came into one of the preliminary draft alternatives and then not mysteriously disappeared again. The Park Service really never has that focus on equity and the environment all in the same time. So we think that's a solution. We also think that this has to be done, since it's such a political hot point, it has to be done with a good dialogue with the public. And in order to engender that, we've got to have a clear understanding of what land is available. And they've never really given us an underlying look at the environment where, you know, land could be available. In general, we've said we think that the developed areas are the way to go, but they've never really given us a template upon which to work.
That goes back to your criticism about the need for land use and essentially, changes in land use to go deeper.
This is a golden opportunity to go very far in reworking the equity question and really and truly improving the environment through land use changes. And, you know, because there's going to be a natural tendency to bash environmentalists, I want to say that we've talked about equity from our very first breath as a group. And we've insisted, along with the Campers Coalition, who are not environmentalists, that the camping issue has got to be resolved in the direction of equity.
Well, I've got a caller here actually right on point, and Brian is calling us from Newport Beach. Brian, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm with the co-founder of Yosemite Valley Campers Coalition. And our main mission is to provide access for affordable, family-friendly, drive-in, auto-based camping. It's the tradition of the Yosemite Valley. What the plan proposes are walk-in sites. I'd like to focus on the inequity, as Greg just said. Walk-in sites are not what the public wants and have experienced for 150 years. We cannot come in on a bus with our camping gear and be expected to walk it in. And that's what the park is trying to say. These campsites are increasing to 640. Well, wait a minute. They're walk-in sites. Are you going to do massive parking lots for people to walk in their gear like Camp 4? That's no good. Are you going to come in on a bus and expect to bring your gear and walk it in? There is an inequity as far as the numbers. The needle that's being thread is deception by the Park Service. This is a pay-to-play plan. You cannot keep telling people they got to pay more to access the park. The little buck-a-bunk tent cabins at Curry used to be a buck-a-bunk when I was a kid. I'm part of five generations of camping. Now it's 118. That's the minimum stay, unless you go to housekeeping, which is around $120 a night. But it's $20 a night for a family to camp in Yosemite Valley. You know, we got to have it affordable, too. Or do we have tour buses that will bring people in to stay at the lodging? Greg's point is exactly, had we not had the lawsuit, we would have lost so much camping in the valley that I praise Greg for what he's done.
All right. I thank you, Brian, for that call. And I want to get to actually some of the listener comments that are coming in, and many of them are coming in. A listener writes, if they really want to restore the Merced River in Yosemite Valley, then they need to put back the moraine at the west end of the valley that the Army Corps of Engineers removed 100-plus years ago to prevent the valley from flooding every year. Let the bikes and ice rinks stay. Laura writes, ugh, the critics make me so angry. We need to give our parks time to heal so they can keep we can keep enjoying them. Humans need to be less selfish. And Steve says, more bicycles, electric vehicles, shuttles, fewer internal combustion engines, RVs. Yosemite is a huge park with many areas which are easy to enjoy away from crowds. So don't take the fun away and don't destroy facilities which are already in place. Chris says, I suppose McClintock's idea of the park is one filled with ATVs and snowmobiles. If it doesn't harm... burn gas, and if it ain't loud, it's a hippie liberal conspiracy. A number of other comments here I just want to get to, time permitting. Andrew writes, I grew up in a gateway community of Oakhurst, and I can attest to the overly crowded nature of the park. Tom McClintock's comments ignore the fact that visitation is still growing and will become highly detrimental if land use continues to favor essentially ruining the natural space for tourists to enjoy. John says, would they consider bringing back the Native Americans who were living in the park that were removed when they decided to take over the land and keep it wild? That would make it more authentic, even more so. Jerry in Danville says, McClintock doesn't represent Yosemite. He represents the business interests. It's up to the rest of us to represent Yosemite. Paul Rogers, I'll go back to you on this. Where's this all headed? Can you map it out for us?
Well, as I said at the top, you can see there's this 100-year-long debate in the United States about where the line is in our national parks, these beloved places that represent the best in the history of the United States, the best in the natural heritage of the United States. We want to know, how do you save them and how do you use them? And I think that's what you've heard over the last hour. What I think is happening here, I have been trying to get Senator Feinstein to talk about this for the last 2 or 3 months. She, her staff will not put her on the phone for an interview to talk about it. And what I've heard is that she is talking with John Jarvis, the National Park Service director, behind the scenes, trying to figure out some compromise. I don't know what she's saying or exactly who's in those conversations, but it's clear that it is not politically viable to take bicycle rentals out of Yosemite Valley. People might say it's a small issue, but it's politically a big explosive issue. And I think the Park Service is scrambling to try to make some of these politically hot issues go away and also not get sued again by Greg Adair and his group. And I don't know that they're going to be able to thread that needle. The ultimate outcome is going to be that they'll come up with a new plan at the end of the, or not a new plan, but a revised plan at the end of the year. The groups will have to decide whether they want to sue or let it go forward. And people like McClintock have some other legislative remedies. The budget was mentioned. They could try to remove the 81 miles of Merced River in the park from the wild and scenic river system. That's probably not too likely. But in the end, I think much of this plan will go forward, and I don't think a lot of these campsites are actually going to get rebuilt unless the public really rises up. So my prediction is you'll find some way to get the bike rentals back in there. There'll be a temporary ice rink, some of these other facilities are going to go. But the campsite problem remains. There are not enough campsites in Yosemite Valley, and the Park Service has not been honest with the public about how many really were there before the flood. It always hides that number in its planning documents.
Well, I thank you, Paul Rogers, who is an environment reporter with the San Jose Mercury News and managing editor at KQED's Science and Environment Unit. Thanks also to Tom McClintock, who joined us earlier, Republican Congressional Representative of the 4th District, and Ron Sundergill, Senior Director of the Pacific Region of the National Parks Conservation Association, and Greg Adair, Director of the Friends of Yosemite Valley, and Wendy Brown Berry, Founder and Chair of Yosemite for Everyone. Thank you, our listeners, as well. And today, once again, we're dedicating a few minutes to address your feedback. I want to start with a show that examined race inequality in 2013 in light of the George Zimmerman verdict. The show featured several activists from the African-American community. Austin had this to say. This wasn't a discussion of racial equality in America. It was a discussion about black disadvantage from the perspective of older African-Americans. Yawn. Been there, done that. What is this, 1970? Can we add the voices of millennial blacks, conservative blacks, Asians, Latinos, centrists, or even right-wing whites? Excuse me, I'm tired of defending NPR to my conservative friends just to hear this kind of echo chamber lecture on my radio. Disappointing. And multiple listeners wrote in to suggest that the conservation should not have focused on black versus white issues, in part because George Zimmerman is Hispanic. Dan wrote, a Latino man shot a black man. No whites were involved. Your show is fanning the flames of racism. Still other listeners found that show inspirational. Nancy wrote, great conversation. Thank you. We do need leadership at every level, not just celebrity or presidential. I am looking newly at what I can do to improve race relations in our country. I'm bringing my strong back. I will be an advocate. We also heard from listeners who were displeased with our presentation of Plan Bay Area, a regional transportation and housing plan aimed at accommodating growth while reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Linda from Novato wrote, I had the misfortune to listen to your program yesterday on Plan Bay Area. The politically correct cover-up you provided wasn't journalism in any reasonable sense. With the plan, the devil is in the details, especially the fundamental assumptions, and not in the purported good intentions. You ignored the realities of the plan and pushed aside the many reasonable and well-informed criticisms. And several listeners wrote in to thank us for featuring conservative political scientist Peter Berkowitz. Eric wrote, Berkowitz talks sense, in my opinion, but listeners may find it out of resonance with the liberal groupthink of the Bay Area. That's all the more reason to challenge our assumptions with new ideas. Kudos to Forum for being willing to bring this to the KQED audience. And during our last listener segment, you may remember that Tony, a listener, suggested we do a show on invisible disabilities. Well, Tony, we agreed. So we're focusing our next In My Experience show on that topic. Listeners, if you have an invisible disability, please take a moment to visit our website and share your insights with us. And as always, thank you for your feedback and the ongoing conversation. Audio archives of all our shows are available at kqed.org/forum, and you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Until next time. And our credits, Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of the program. For all of us, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.